formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon 222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $70 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Order your Berkey Sport today. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438, or order on the web.
as you said, Islamo-fascism, right? Because fascism has a bad connotation to it. Never mind that we're becoming something of a fascist country here. So they always have to have this enemy, and it always, especially now, has to include a religious element so that you stir up agitation and so forth, which is, you know, what Saul Alinsky said. If you're going to have anything like this, you have to stir up the people. You have to keep them exercised. You have to have a perceived enemy. And I think you've used the quote to that effect many times.
The best enemy that money could buy. And really, what's really so tragic today is that so many American religious leaders are going along with this idea. I got an email from one of my supporters the other day saying that he's trying to tell his minister about what's going on. And he said, oh, no, we've got to continue our war over there with the Islamo-fascists. They're going to come over here and kill us if we don't go over there and kill them first. This is a minister. Words to that effect. And the tragedy is we suddenly say, oh, well, we're fighting a just war. Well, a just war is a war that you're fighting to defend your country. We're not defending our country. America is trying to create this world empire, and we've got to destroy the Muslim world because a lot of those leaders won't go along with our agenda. And this is why we have troops in 130 nations throughout the world, but we can't tell the American people. This is why we still have troops stationed in Germany and Japan and in South Korea over a half a century after those wars stopped. This is why we want to keep our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East. There are people who have a different world view. They want a world government, and they want to destroy Christianity. Of course, they profess many times to be Christians themselves, but you never judge a person by what they say. You watch and see what they do. And I'll tell you that there's so many Americans who are so disillusioned with the idea that we're justifying torture. I don't care whether they're bad guys or not. You don't torture human beings. And especially since most of the people at Guantanamo are innocent anyway. Some of them may be guilty, but an awful lot of them are innocent. I want you to stop and think about the screams of innocent people being tortured by the American military under orders that come right out of the White House. And then ask yourself, are we really a Christian nation, or have we somehow lost our way?
Right, and as you were saying that, I was just thinking, I don't want to give the wrong impression, because just like Saddam was a CIA asset back in the late 50s, part of a six-man assassination team helped by the CIA over there in Iraq, Osama has CIA links in the 80s as well. But let's just assume for a minute, and I don't want to portray the guy in a favorable light, but let's just assume for a minute that you looked at it from their point of view, and you said, well, we're not, this would be Al-Qaeda or whatever, we're not attacking Sweden, you know, we're not calling Sweden the great Satan. So it's not like they're attacking any nation that has liberty. I mean, the Swedes have lots of liberty. In some cases, it's license more than liberty. So it's a misrepresentation to say, well, they hate us because of our freedom, unless by freedom you really mean license and immorality. And I think I hear the music. Are we breaking?
We do. We're going to a break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, certainly one of my favorite guests, and I hope yours as well. Well, Dennis, go right ahead.
And the second thing, that if you were to believe Osama, and like I said, I don't want to portray him in a positive light. He has CIA ties, probably as well. At least we know he did. But if you look at the arguments that he made, it's that, well, what we're doing is really a sort of liberation in the sense that it's that evil West which is propping up these dictators like, you know, the Saudi royal family, which oppresses not only their own people, but, you know, go and try and spread the Christian gospel over there in Saudi Arabia and see what happens to you as well. Now, I'm sure Osama wouldn't say, yes, we love the Christian gospel, but the point is, what he's saying is, it's the Christian West, is supposedly Christian West, actually the power elite, as I call them, is a purveyor of immorality wherever they go. They're trying to bring their culture into the area of the Middle East in which Islam is prevalent. And not only that, for oil reserves or whatever it is, they're befriending these dictators just like they did in, let's say, Central America, the same sort of thing. In that case, you would have a dictator And as I've said in the past, this is sort of a setup, because it's just an invitation for the communists or Sandinistas, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, to say, aha, you know, you people who are very poor, hardworking people, and those rich people up there, they're living high on the hog. Well, who is it that's propping them up? Ah, you know, it's Uncle Sam, the ugly American, and so on. So a lot of this is portrayed in a way that you have to understand. Now, that doesn't mean you have to agree with Muslims, but you need to, if you're going to address the problem, you at least need to look at the average. I'm not talking about the terrorists going around Al-Qaeda killing everybody. I'm talking about the average Muslim over there and the situation as they see it. For example, when we say we're coming over there to bring democracy, well, to them, that doesn't mean separation of church and state. That literally means that they live by their religion. And so you have in the Iraqi constitution, it says you have freedom of speech and so on and so on. But there's always a little comma there that says, except as provided by law. And when you look at the constitution, it says that it's Sharia law. And that's what they want. That is what, quote, democracy means to them. And so for us to say, well, you know, we're bringing freedom and so forth over there in a Western sense, you can't really expect that, and that's why there's a fair amount of resentment among those people towards us. Not only that, but if, you know, back in 1991, if you're killing and wounding their brothers and sisters, there isn't going to be this great love for the American soldiers there in the first place.
Well, I feel sorry for the American soldiers who are going over there and being asked to fight without adequate equipment, and that's why so many have been killed by the improvised explosive devices. They knew how to stop this. They had actual vehicles that would prevent this. Did they provide them for the men? Oh, no, they provided them for the visiting dignitaries and for the officers, but not for the men. And how many men, of course, have lost their lives or been permanently damaged, brain damaged, or their sight has lost their... Because we did not give them the material they needed to be safe. And then, of course, on top of that, if you read certainly Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez's book, you'll find out that time and time again why they were forced to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our guest, Dr. Dennis Keddie, exploring really what's going on over in Iraq and understanding if you believe what you're being told by the controlled media and the propaganda, why you're going to continue justifying an unjust war. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Keddie, and he's simply been talking about the fact that if you go into the background of Saddam Hussein, back in the 50s, he was an agent of the CIA, part of a CIA-financed assassination team. And if you want the documentation, we have that. We have books written a decade or more ago that go into the background of that. But you're never going to hear this discussed by Rush Limbaugh or many of the official pundits here in the United States. Some of the finest conservative commentators that money could buy. And Sydney, then of course we go ahead, we fast forward to what's going on in Iraq today. And we're involved in a war. They don't hate us because we're free. Why don't they hate the Swedes? They're free too. No, they hate us because we're over there trying to force them to accept a system they don't want. And of course, we talk about being over there to produce democracy, and Dr. Keddie makes the point very well that if you read the Iraqi constitution we forced upon these people, it has a provision in it that you have all of these freedoms as long as they go along with, in essence, Sharia law. We have actually brought a country, a Muslim dictatorial power, a government into power in Iraq today, according to their constitution, and you have no freedom if it violates Sharia law, and there's not one in a million Americans who's ever read the Iraqi constitution. You go right ahead, Dennis.
Sure. Now, Saddam, again, I don't want to, you know, like Osama portray Saddam as a nice guy, but the point is, when he was there, you at least didn't have Christians getting beat up and slaughtered and, you know, run out of their own country. Now, you know, I don't want to excuse Saddam. He's an evil man. But the point is, what you have now in terms of religious freedom is far less. And also, I remember back after the war began around 5 years ago, not too long, about, you know, 6-7 months into it, what you had was they had an interview with an average Iraqi, and he said, you know, and he's speaking for all of the people in his area, so we're getting real suspicious about this. You mean that this government who can send a cruise missile from miles offshore and hit a precise teeny little target somewhere, you know, some ministerial building, you know, about 20 feet by 20 feet, they can't get us electricity during the day? And so what part of my article I say is that the Bush administration keeps telling us about the military success of the surge, but it fails to inform the public, you haven't heard this recently, that after 5 years in Iraq, there are still water shortages, electricity is only 2 to 5 hours a day, garbage isn't collected for days or weeks, and many Iraqi government employees want bribes to even provide basic services. Now, surely, if you're bringing democracy to a country, after 5 years, you would think they would be able to accomplish these things.
Unless
the military.
Of course, unless maybe you don't want to solve the problem. You
That's
want
right.
the problem so that you can justify keeping American troops there indefinitely. And that's exactly what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. Look and see this agreement that President Bush is forcing on the Iraqis.
Absolutely. That's the permanent military presence, the 58 bases, and when they, I mean, shortly after the war began, they started constructing not only military bases, but huge military bases. And so it was obvious to the Iraqis that these guys aren't going anywhere soon. They're more or less here to stay. Well, picking up on another, because I want to proceed through this, topic in the article, what happened 2 years prior to the war was, of course, 9/11. And I was always, I mean, right from the get-go, very suspicious of that. I don't want to get into, you know, a lot of extreme theories and so on. But one of the things that I found curious was why these top Pentagon officials suddenly, the day before 9/11, canceled their travel plans for the next morning. Same thing with Mayor Willie Brown, got a call late at night. Everybody just assumed, well, you know, it's an FAA general warning. They get them all the time. Who cares? So what I did was I had filed a Freedom of Information Act, and come to find out the FAA did not send any warnings, general warnings, nothing, for at least a week beforehand. So what these people got, whereas Willie Brown or the Pentagon officials, was not some FAA warning. It had to be some other source. And so what I did was file the Freedom of Information Act, and lo and behold, this speedy government reply came just the other day. And what happened was I knew that General Mahmoud Ahmed, or Ahmad as they sometimes pronounce it, had been here before 9/11, just coincidentally, at least a week before. He's the one who was head of the ISI, Pakistani Intelligence, and a lot of the CIA operations over that area of the world are run through the ISI, supposedly our buddies, although we know they're really not helping us go after Osama, which, well, who knows, maybe that means they are our buddies after all.
But isn't that the same General Ahmad who was funding, sending money to Mohammed Atta just shortly before the attack?
$100,000 to Mohammed Atta about a month or so just before the attack. And then, as I said, the top Pentagon officials canceled their travel plans. So I received a partial response on May 20th.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and what did you find out on your Freedom of Information request?
Well, it's like a freedom of lack of information. It was amazing. When you get these things, you see all this stuff blacked out. I mean, it's like most of it's blacked out. But anyway, on May 20th, I got a partial response. I filed four requests. I received a response on two of them, so there's two more coming. You know, good luck, hold your breath. And what that indicated, the response on May 20th, just a month or so ago, indicated that Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz had an office call with General Ahmed and others on September 10th, the day before 9/11. Now, I noticed blacked out was the topic, quote, U.S.-Pakistani military and intelligence relations, end quote, and most other sections. It was all blacked out. Now, what they said they did show was that DOD, Department of Defense, indicated General Ahmed met with the National Security Council on members on September 5 and 6. However, blacked out was where he was the day before, on the 4th. Now, if you stop and think about that, what did they not want me to know? I mean, if they're telling me he's meeting with top Pentagon officials and he's meeting with members of the National Security Council, what was it on September 4th he was doing or meeting with that they thought was even more important than meeting with those guys? So something seems fishy here. It also indicated there was an office call between Assistant Secretary of Defense Peter Rodman and General Ahmed, in which Rodman, and this is one of the few things that wasn't blacked out, is that Rodman, quote, recalled past personal experience working with Pakistan while on former Secretary of State Kissinger's staff, end quote. So there again, what you find are these important players, Wolfowitz, Rodman, they have ties to the power elite, and General Ahmed, who wired the $100,000, and you don't see us insisting that we bring General Ahmed over to Guantanamo, do you? So something seems amiss there. That's one of the topics I cover here in the government and press media cover-up. Now, another topic that I get into is what the power elite has people not know, what is not reported. And the press and media is extremely important in this. For example, you have them reporting, and you've seen it over and over in the demonstrations and the crying and so forth, about communist Chinese oppression in Tibet. Now, you've seen that. It's all over the place. What you don't see reported is the persecution of Christians in China. And Rutherford Institute President John Whitehead had a report recently, in which he is talking about the preparations over there for the Olympics.
We'll be back in just a moment here at Fraser Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cuddy was simply saying that he finally got this answer to a Freedom of Information request it put in about 5 years ago. They got it. They're supposed to be answered, I think, within 60 days, but sometimes they're just a little tardy. They don't quite get around to it. When he got this Freedom of Request response, and of course he was asking about General Mahmoud Ahmad was doing when he was here in this country, and about the fact that certain people in our government seem to know the attack was coming because the military leaders canceled their flights for the 11th of September. On the 10th of September, we know that Mayor Willie Brown got a call warning him. It didn't come from the federal aviation agency, so where did it come from? Well, Dr. Cuddy just describes this response he gets. A page mostly blacked out of information, but it talks certainly about the fact that Mahmoud Ahmad, the head of Pakistani intelligence, which had financed the Taliban from its very inception. I mean, Taliban was financed, it's a term meaning students, and they were indoctrinated in this radical form of Islam, you know, in their Pakistani madras schools, and then they were sent into Afghanistan to take over the country. The Taliban was financed by Saudi Arabia and by our good friends in Pakistan. So Mahmoud Ahmad is meeting with key government officials on the 4th and 5th of September. And it's really, of course, why would they suddenly send something over to Dr. Cuddy that's totally blacked out? Are they trying to keep Osama bin Laden from knowing what happened? Or are they trying to keep the American people from knowing what the military knew immediately before that September 11th attack? And there's no reason to conceal this information unless there's something to conceal. So then, of course, Dr. Cuddy was going on to another subject. Go right ahead.
Sure, but picking up what you just said, the ISI funded, they also created, they actually created the Taliban. You have to wonder why they're doing that. I mean, why are they creating the Taliban in another country? For what purpose would they do that? And one of the lobbyists for the Taliban was Zalmay Khalilzad, who, lo and behold, then became our representative to Afghanistan, an ambassador to Iraq, and so forth, the very guy who had been the lobbyist for the Taliban back in the 90s. So, you know, strange bedfellows and all that sort of thing. So the topic I was just mentioning here was China. And what you have is preparation for the Olympics. And John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute said the preparation include, quote, religious repression, torture, sexual abuse, and arbitrary detention. Now, that's of Christians in China. And what they do is he had access to, was smuggled out of China, what they actually do over there. Now remember, you have leading evangelicals in this country, leading people, TV evangelicals, who have, you know, tremendous amounts of money and clout and all that, saying China is our friend. China is wonderful. We've got to ship Bibles over to China and so forth. Well, what's really going on, if you're not approved by the government over there, sort of like, you know, in the Soviet Union, you had the approved churches, and how any press reporter has to get their approval and is ushered around Shanghai or whatever to see, you know, nice buildings and so on. What he had smuggled out of China was what happens to you if you do not get approved by the government. And there was there's a photo, it's available, you can see it, of house church member, her name is Sister Aizan Miao, being shocked by a policeman with an electric cattle prod. Other photos smuggled out of China, and I've seen them, has a pastor being subjected to water torture. Another Christian is placed in the tiger cages that were infamous in Vietnam, where you can't even stand up. And it showed another policeman standing on a woman's ankles and rolling them. That means from side to side, excruciating pain. And so, not to belabor this, but Whitehead was just infuriated. And he said, quote, persecution of religious individuals has been common in China for more than a half century. The major corporate sponsors of the Olympics have been silent. The worst of all, though, he says, has been the deafening silence from the Evangelical Church in America. Shame on American Christians, end quote. So there's a blackout almost of the persecution, especially of Christians who do not bow to the whims of these individuals.
And all they tell us now is how exciting it's going to be when we're going to see all these wonderful athletes over there competing. And isn't it wonderful, this brotherhood of people? And we're going to the most brutal country in the world today. And America, of course, don't feel bad, because America's financed it at American, World Bank, International Monetary Fund, Asian Development Bank, Export-Import Bank, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Chase Manhattan, many of our major corporations, in fact, the largest automobile producer in China today is General Motors. You can almost look at those wonderful new cities over in China and imagine they're all made in America, all financed with your money, ladies and gentlemen, all financing this brutal tyranny that is persecuting Christians. And where is the outcry from the Christian church? In fact, as Dennis points out, what do we see on television? Why, we hear all about, of course, the fact that the Lakers lost the NAB. Isn't that terrible? Britney Spears, you know, Paris Hilton, and of course, all sorts of incidental and nonsensical things. Yes, we should be concerned about the fires and the suffering and the drought in America, but shouldn't we be concerned about the tyranny over in communist China, especially when the United States is financing most of it? Go right ahead, Dennis.
Sure. And if you walked up to one of these people, an average American, and said something like, why would you love Hitler? And they look at you in horror. Love Hitler? Of course I wouldn't. You know, he killed a lot of innocent people, Jews and Christians and so on. And then you'd ask them, say, well, communist China's done the same thing, even more than Hitler slaughtered. You know, 100 million of its own people at least 60 million, with famines in the early 1960s. Here they are, you know, selling Christians' body parts to rich Americans. You know, you want a kidney? Okay, fine. We'll take one of these Christians who's not bowing and scraping to us. We'll just give him a little shot there, wipe him out. Here's a kidney for you. And this stuff is going on. It's just like the Nazis did. But for some reason, the Nazis, Hitler's bad. And he was bad. But the communist Chinese are doing the same sort of thing. And, hey, they're great. You know, let's go get a cheap item from Walmart or somewhere.
And let's all be watching the Olympics. Isn't this going to be exciting, you know? Think of the competition over there. This sort of brotherly love among the athletes. And this is exactly what communist China wants. If we told them we're going to withdraw completely unless you change your attitude towards Christians, we're not sending any of our athletes. They're not going. Why, of course, they would change. But, of course, we don't threaten them. We do everything we can to encourage them in what they're doing. And this, of course, reflects not only the policies of our government and our religious leaders, but of the good people in America who are doing nothing, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Go right ahead, Dennis.
That's a truism. It's absolutely right. And, ignorance is no excuse for going along with these sort of things. Now, if you asked them, I mean, if you did a study, you know, why does the average American do this? Well, the obvious reason is they just love these cheap products coming in China. They'll, you know, they'll say, wow, look at this great deal I got at this particular store, that, you know, it's selling such and such, and then people will make excuses, well, if we broke off relations, you know, then we'd have no influence. Well, even if that were true, what you would do in that case back in the 80s when we first started hearing this stuff is we'll say, okay, we'll give you a year, you know, and if within the year you don't stop persecution, then we'll break off. But they never say that. We've been through 25 years of this. Well, if we break off relations, we won't have any influence. And it doesn't have any influence. In fact, it gets worse.
In fact, I think people have to look back to the Tiananmen Square slaughter there. And
sure.
You know, tens of thousands of people were killed in Tiananmen Square and the surrounding area because they supported this. And how did we punish Red China? Why, the Bush administration, the first Bush administration, immediately rewarded them most favored nation trade status. Most favored nation trade status. That's how we punished China. And where was the outcry? Why, it was deafening in its silence.
That's right. And Henry Kissinger was right quick to write a piece in the L.A. Times or somewhere saying, well, now, you know, that's really unfortunate. But wait a minute. Let's not be too hasty, you know. We need to deal, you know, realpolitik. We need to face the fact that there's 1 billion at the time, you know, 1.2 billion people. And so realistically, we have to live in the, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so that's the attitude of the power elite. Of course, there is this economic, you know, swinging sword over our head, and that's why I include this statement by Ian Williams. He was writing back 4 years ago in the Asia Times. It was January 23, and he said, quote, and this is 4 years ago, he says, quote, all Beijing has to do is to mention the possibility of a sell order going down the wires. It would devastate the U.S. economy more than any nuclear strike the Chinese could manage at the moment.
You mean selling their treasury bonds that
right.
They're holding? And they would say, sir, we're totally dependent upon them to buy our debt, and as a result, we don't dare speak out. My goodness. But then why have we put ourselves into a position where we have to borrow trillions of dollars from other countries just to keep going? We have to borrow over $2 billion every day just to pay our debts. Why are we doing that? And then this latest debacle where we're giving everybody $600 so they can buy, go to Walmart and buy Chinese goods. Come on now. Go ahead.
That's right. Increase our dependency and trade imbalance and all that stuff. The same thing with Saudi Arabia. The Saudis, just like the Chinese, have about a $1 trillion each of our debts. That's why, you know, we're so deferential to both of them. One of the true things that Bill Clinton did say was that the way we're paying for Katrina is the willingness of the Chinese to keep shouldering our debt for us. And so it's basically a blackmail sort of thing. They can at any time, as this fellow said 4 years ago, devastate the U.S. economy more than any nuclear strike. And so this is hanging over our head. The next topic I cover in terms of a government or press media cover-up is what's going on with this. The design of Cecil Rhodes was to get the World Socialist Government. You'd have these regional economic arrangements, and then you'd link them all up. For example, the European Union and so on. So in the press, you have at least heard something about the Security and Prosperity Partnership, although not that much. Mainly people who are concerned about it, but a little bit.
This is, of course, the North American Union, where we right. give up our sovereignty and we raise the living standards of the American to that of the Mexican peasant, would we join with Mexico and with Canada into the North American Union.
Right. So what you'll do is you may hear something about the Security and Prosperity Partnership, because people are concerned, especially in Texas, Oklahoma, about the Trans-Texas Corridor being, you know, the first step in a Trans-American Superhighway and so on. But the question I'm asking in terms of a cover-up is, how much have you heard reported about the Canamex Corridor? They're talking about this Trans-Texas Corridor, but what about the Canamex Corridor? I mean, this thing has already clicked. You know, we don't have to imagine what might happen when the highway goes through Texas up to Oklahoma and so forth. You already have a system in place called Canamex Corridor. Nothing practically has been said. Now, this thing begins way down south in Nogales, Arizona, up through Las Vegas, Salt Lake City, Idaho Falls, and Helena, Montana, and on northward. And what this involves is a tourist, small freight, telecommunications, so forth. They say, oh, big deal, you know, a highway system. So what? Well, that could be the case. It could be some sort of innocuous little highway system. However, if you look at their website, they indicate this is more than that. This is what they say, quote, it's It includes smart process partnerships. Interstate cooperation is a key element of the CANAMEX vision. The plan calls for integration of e-government services, electronic services, such as license renewal, business registration between states, creation of an e-signature program, and other innovations to create a borderless economy. Now, in case you think they're just talking about, you know, a system within the U.S., the thing goes on and next says, part of the quote, CANAMEX is another provide NAFTA corridor that would facilitate easy access for trade across the borders of Mexico and Canada. So this isn't just within the U.S. This is a corridor already going from Mexico through the U.S. up to Canada with this creation of e-signature programs, license renewals, business registration, and so forth. So this is far more advanced than the Trans-Texas corridor already.
And of course, the thing is, you have to understand there is an elite group who has no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is this globalist dream. And of course, it's uniting the entire world. They don't care what the American people think because they feel that we're just too inferior. We don't understand these more noble goals of theirs. The New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. And, of course, they're going to go ahead with it, no matter what we say, just like they're doing over in Europe. Of course, recently, there in the European Union, the Irish voted it down. The only reason they let them vote was because they were sure they were going to support it. They voted it down. They said, they can't do this. We've got to have democracy. We'll get the Parliament to agree with it. We'll ask them to vote again. You know, probably meaning we're going to fix the vote like they did in Ohio and Florida in 2004 and 2000. But be that as it may, we want democracy, therefore we're not going to listen to the people because democracy has nothing to do with what the people want. It has to do with what the elite want, and the American people better start waking up. There is an elite. They work through a number of organizations I refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness, and we're learning about new ones all the time, but their loyalty is not to the United States. Okay, Dennis, is there anything else you're going to want to cover before we get to Dr. Frudenberg? Because I'd love to know what he had to say.
Well, it's relevant. Another government cover-up I put in here, a little press and media attention, has been about vaccines triggering autism. For years and years, the government, of course, has denied any linkage. Every time you ask them, there's a report, and the parents group says something about a linkage. It's almost always followed by the reporter going to some government official says, no, there's no linkage. However, there was just a little notice the other day that the Centers for Disease Control head, Julie Gerberding, was on a CNN show called House Call. And she explained that, well, yes, vaccines can trigger autism in a vulnerable subset of children.
That's right, about one in every 65 boys.
Yeah, small subset there. Not too many at all. So anyway, I won't go into the whole thing at length here, but I include, and if you look at the article, you'll see a long statement by a Gloria Wright, whom I know. She's in the same state as I am. She's a vice president of Able Child, and they had hearings recently, the U.S. House Ways and Means Committee, so she wrote this letter to the chairman. And I won't read the whole thing, but it's really interesting how many medications this grandson was on. And before he was put on that, he could read and write and all kinds of things. Now he's had suicide ideation and thoughts of murder and all of this. And these people kept prescribing the drugs. And so she was wondering, once they got custody back of this child, he had, you know, diabetes, heart arrhythmia, all kinds of horrible things. What they found was even though these people should have known this, these psychiatrists, they kept prescribing these things to this youngster. And there were several problems with that. First of all, they were ignoring this federal law that instead of putting the child in a foster home, you need to put him with a relative. Plus, you got to remember, the states get paid for these foster homes. So there's a built-in incentive to keep these youngsters in these foster homes and getting drugged. I hear the music.
Go right ahead. I'll tell you when to stop.
Okay. So anyway, Ms. Wright says that they could care less about these kids. Plus, what they do is clinical trials or do off-label prescribing. So these things aren't even recommended for these youngsters.
In other words, they're experimenting. The government is experimenting with children, any child they can. But nobody's ever punished. You have to understand that. As you work for the government, you're above that. Our guest, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, will be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Well, Dennis, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Okay, well, I'll do Dr. Feudenberg right after 30 seconds of my case here about one more cover-up. Not too long ago, you had this great monument built to FDR. And if you ask the average person, what do you think of President Reagan? Oh, wonderful, the New Deal, oh, save the day, great guy, great monument. That's because the press and media cover up his misdeeds. And I only include one example. On December 1st, 1943, at Tehran, Iran, there was a secret meeting. FDR, Stalin, and so forth were there. And at this secret meeting, he agreed, FDR, that Stalin, he would be given Poland, later Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, just given to him. But he said, now, Uncle Joe, Stalin, you know, keep this quiet, because next year, in 1944, I'm coming up for re-election, and there's all these Polish Americans, and they may not like this. So, you know, shh, just keep this quiet. Now, that's just one of his misdeeds, which the press and media have totally covered up. So people think he's a wonderful guy. Never mind Pearl Harbor. You know, these other things as well. Now, think of all the suffering after the war in the Soviets that the Poles did, the Estonians, the Latvians, the Lithuanians. This man's responsible for that, and yet we say, oh, you know, let's build a great monument. So anyway, there, if you read the article, there are other cover-ups and so forth that I include that. Now, about Dr. Feudenberg, we've been trying to find out what these studies were, so about 60 seconds, I guess we got, I'll just try and slide through this. What he said here was there were studies carried out in four cities with affluent populations. They looked at, you know, education and so forth, and they had to have a certain number of neurologists. Palo Alto, Stanford Medical School, Bethesda, Madison, Wisconsin, and Evanston Hospital. Advertisements were placed in these papers in 1987. They considered age, and they had a blind group as well, because, you know, you want to have a comparison. And they would examine them like 5 years later, and the studies were conducted between 1993 and 97. And they went into this actually thinking that the vaccine would help, that you wouldn't get Alzheimer's. But they were very surprised. They saw 65 potential subjects, 12 a year. They followed them very, very closely. They had matched pairs for age, sex, and so forth. And at the end of 5 years, 93-97, the subjects were reevaluated, and this is sort of technical, mini-mental scores in 88 in the vaccine group were below 20, that's 12 to 19, whereas only 8 of the individuals in the placebo group were in that range. In other words, the exact opposite effect. They thought they weren't going and expecting that there'd be an increase in the people with Alzheimer's who took the flu. They were expecting the opposite, but when they found out that there was an increase, this startled them, and there's more to it, but time's run out.
Well, we had, I guess it's been Dr. Dennis Kenny. Thank you, Dennis. I'll call you, and we'll talk about that. Sounds fascinating. We need to get the truth out. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Dr. Kelly was just talking about Dr. Feudenberg's work. He's certainly a world-known immunologist, and of course, he has noted that if you take the flu vaccine between ages 55 and 65, and they studied a group here in the United States and several other centers throughout the world, they found a significant increase in the incidence of Alzheimer's disease if you took the influenza vaccine. I went to the hospital this morning. Of course, they ask you, oh, have you had your influenza vaccine? I said, I wouldn't take that. It just and it has all sorts of complications. And the nurse looked over at me and said, every time I take it, I get the flu. And I said, well, I don't take it. I don't get the flu. So that's what it's really all about. They know what they're doing, but because it has a significant influence, increasing Alzheimer's disease. We have got a great four-tape set on Alzheimer's disease. Every American should get this information readily available from Radio Liberty by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. We've got two four-tape sets on mercury. We've got several DVDs on mercury, and it's available. And certainly some of this is put out by Dr. Geyer, who studied this extensively. Others are put out by certainly a professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky. So you can call and get the DVDs on mercury. You can get the four-tape sets on mercury. We actually carry a wonderful, wonderful DVD. It's a talk that was given at one of our conferences. And it comes with a CD-ROM. You get that for nothing. And, of course, the talk is called Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. And, of course, if you look at the CD-ROM, you'll see literally thousands of pages of documentation. That is, the government knows all about it. and they're poisoning our children. Why would anybody want to do that? Because there are evil people in the world, ladies and gentlemen. There really are evil people. Most of the people working in government aren't evil. But when you get kids into a key position in government, why, and you try to do the right thing, they get rid of you. And, of course, I've been to the CDC. I talked to those people. It wasn't until I actually went there and talked to them I realized that we weren't trying to stop the AIDS epidemic. And that's why over 500,000 Americans have died of this unnecessary disease. I even wrote a book called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Although at the time I did not recognize the fact that this was a man-made disease. How can we say that? Well, you certainly want to get my talk on Nundare College genocide, my talk on planned population reduction. You want to get my talk on a book written by Dr. Nichols, Garth Nichols. And, of course, it's called Operation Daylily. He's certainly one of the outstanding scientists in the entire world. And, of course, he tells about the attempts on his life and his wife's life, you know, because they were trying to expose some of the experiments being done down in Texas on prison populations, specifically in Huntsville. And then, of course, the book, again, Project Daylily, L-I-L-Y. So, and then, of course, there's so much other information. We've got a great new DVD, and it's a talk that was given by Dr. Nicholson, complete with his slideshow called Terrible New Diseases. We've just made this available. It goes into all these terrible new diseases they've created, and many of these, of course, have been created in the laboratory. Why would they do that? Because we're dealing with evil people. How do we know it's really true? Well, you go back and you read the book that was written in 1970 by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's Obama's foreign policy advisor. But in 1970, Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote a book called Between Two Ages, America and the Technotronic Age. And you can actually go back and you can get that book up on the Amazon.com. for about $100, $150. Why? They don't want you to get the book, quite obviously. They do not want this information out. But in one of the footnotes between pages 55 and 65, he talks about how in the future we're going to be able to create storms and droughts and terrible new diseases. Well, that's what he said, and they're doing it. We've talked to people, at least, Gary. Well, there's a book called Full Disclosure, written based upon the revelations of a man who was part of the group that created the AIDS virus. We carry the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, Ebola. And so they're all available. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. Get the great book on vaccines. Are they safe and effective? And please pray for America.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.